Welcome back, everyone, to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judith Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. Why? Because that's all I do, amicable divorces. Joanna Picotta is here with us today, and she is going to talk about mindfulness, aren't you, Joanna?
Yes, I am. I am.
And you're going to talk about mindfulness from outside of London. And even more, I'm thrilled that you're here because it's a little later at night for you, isn't it?
Definitely. It's quite late here. It's 7 hours of difference. So I'm in Brighton near London, in the seaside. It's an amazing city, by the way.
Oh, I haven't visited.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's just 40 minutes from London. So, you know, I work a lot in London.
Oh, God, that even sounds better. So I want to be mindful of your time. But, you know, Joanna, I did one episode on mindfulness earlier this year, and it was not with a professional who taught mindfulness. So we're going to learn a lot more with you. But interestingly, it was with an attorney who practices mindfulness herself, and I wanted her to share with the listeners how divorcing clients could practice mindfulness, especially if it was a highly litigated divorce. So that's how we dealt with it. But with you, I want to go a lot deeper. And I would like to, because you're a psychotherapist, so you're going to be able to talk to us in ways that only you can. Bearing in mind, we have people listening that are going through divorce or about to go through divorce. So they have extra special considerations and challenges that they're going through right now, right? Could you start by defining mindfulness for us?
Well, the way that I find it easy to explain mindfulness is mindful of something. And our mind is full of thoughts all the time. So we become aware of what's going on with our minds. We become aware of our thinking process. At the same time, starting to distance ourselves for what's going on. So I give an example, right? And this morning, my mind says to me, like, Joanna, you are so lazy. You're always late, you're never doing what you're supposed to do. And normally we go in a conversation with our mind. We normally go, yeah, but I have been working a lot yesterday. You know, I have been doing so much. And my mind says, yes, you know, not much. You could do much, much more. So this is normally the process of thinking that goes on. What we do with mindfulness is to be attentive to our mind without engaging in the conversation by being aware of what is there, but not actually answer it back. So, for example, my mind says, Joanna, you're so lazy. I normally say that we become a bad counselor. And you say, do you have anything more to say? And the mind says, you know, you could be dressed in a different way. Do you have anything more to say? So I'm aware of what my mind is saying to me, but I'm not engaging and not believing with what our mind is saying to us. That is super important.
We can get rid of those negative conversations that beat us down. You know, we make ourselves victims, don't we, by our negative conversations.
Yeah, and the problem is that we do believe that our mind is our inner voice. Our mind is the way we are. And it's not reality. Our mind is an amazing constructive of everything that we experience until now. It's like an amazing computer that has loads of different boxes, loads of different equations. So if you are quite perfectionist, for example, it is normal that our mind is going to be very negative because our mind wants us to be the perfect person. It wants us to be the best we can. It's really rare to wake up in the morning and our mind says something like, oh, you are amazing. Look at you. You're beautiful. It's very rare for our mind to say that. It's normally quite negative. So by being attentive to the patterns of our negative thinking, it's going to be easier for us to understand what to believe and not to believe.
Okay, this is just a little departure, but you said something interesting about we rarely get up and say, God, you're so fabulous. I can't wait to live your day with you, to yourself.
Yeah.
Why is that?
That is something that is interesting. You know, even neuroscience now, we are really puzzled. But I think it's almost like a survival skill that we have that is about, you know, we have to be the best we can. So our mind, it kicks us to go forward, to be better by being quite critical and quite negative. And to be honest, it doesn't work. It can work, but it doesn't work, especially when we are out of balance. And especially when we are, for example, going through a divorce. I'm sure there's a lot of negative thinking going on.
Yes, you know what? Even those who really, really, really have a positive outlook on life, because there are those people who just get up happy. Yeah. I would love to be that person. Let me share with you, I would love to be that person, and I'm not that yet, unless it's a holiday. I get up really happy on holidays and days off, but, you know, for me, even if we were going to make me a little guinea pig here in this discussion, if I have something that I have to do during the day, if I have a challenging client, if I have somebody that actually instills a little fear in me, because when you work in the world of divorce, and please speak to this in your work, you really walk on emotional landmines with people.
Definitely.
I never know if I'm going to inadvertently say something that will really get somebody upset, and you just don't know, because these are strangers who walk into your life and need your help, right? And you too. These are strangers initially.
Yeah.
And then we have to deal with their emotions. But yes, going through divorce has its own set of challenges, because would you say that even the happiest people may be a little off kilter with their thinking in a divorce?
Definitely, because what happened is like, it's the fear. The fear kicks in, and the fear is lots of levels of fear. I do believe, for example, anxiety is the daughter of fear. You know, it's just telling us the old things that can go wrong, right? And in a divorce, is exactly what we fear, is the financial, is the emotional, it's the fear of losing someone, or losing this idea that we have, that we're happy married with a house, with the kids, with the dog, with the swimming pool sometimes, right? All of this ideal of being married is going to go. And the level of uncertainty that comes with that, it's very fearful. Our mind is not very good on dealing with uncertainty. Even if we live a certain level of uncertainty in life, but why do we are so, you know, it's so difficult for us to go through change? It's actually because of uncertainty. When we change, we don't know what's going to come next. And with the divorce, it's exactly that. We don't know what is going to come next. So the levels of anxiety and the levels of fear are much higher than in a normal time, right? So it's a crisis, and it's trauma. It's traumatic.
Absolutely. And even people who come to people like me and say, listen, this is kind of amicable, I still think they have fear, because you never know when somebody outside of your relationship is going to have an influence on your soon-to-be ex-spouse.
Yeah,
destabilizing and changing whatever agreements verbally you've already made.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the level of trust in something like that will change, because in our mind, we will always think the most horrible movies. We're always going to go to the worst possibilities. But that is our anxiety actually telling us that, you know, A, B, C, D, whatever possibility can happen. And all of them sometimes are quite difficult to deal with, because we don't know what's going to happen.
And do we go to the worst case scenario because we're attempting to protect ourselves and think of what we will do in response to these various horrible things that can happen to us?
Exactly. So normally we have two types of anxiety. I call the healthy anxiety, that we have a problem, so the anxiety kicks in to help us to find a solution for that problem. And you have unhealthy anxiety, that when we don't have a problem and is an illusion problem, but anxiety kicks in to find a solution for a problem that doesn't exist. And that is very confusing when we go to a divorce, because we have both of anxieties kicking in, the one that is factual and the one that is imaginary, and one that we are trying to find solutions for problems that are not there yet.
So what should people do? How do we address that level of fear and that inner dialogue? How do we distance ourselves?
Well, one of the levels that we can do, it's actually to be attentive to what our mind is saying. And in the level of anxiety, to understand what is unhealthy, what is healthy and unhealthy, is to make a list of what is the worries that are coming out in our mind in this moment, and actually ask one by one, is this real? Is this factual? Can I do something about this today?
Okay, that sounds good.
And if we cannot do anything about it, so for example, you know, I fear that my husband will find a new partner in this time of the divorce, and I'm going to lose everything because she going to tell him to take the house and take this and take that. Is that real? Is that factual? Is that what's happening? No. Okay, can I do something about this today? No, I cannot do anything about that. So let it go. Next. What is the next worry?
Okay, sticking with that one, because that is such an excellent example that you used. It really is, because it's real life. Especially if you know there's a new partner already there, guaranteed that new partner will go to bat for your soon-to-be ex.
Yes.
And so would this be something that would just soften the anxiety? And that is, learn the law. What can and cannot be done, regardless of whose influence.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Because in your case, you know, for example, you are working with factual. Yeah, you're working what is possible and what is not possible. Right?
Right.
And that is your expertise. But then the emotion kicks in, because even things that is not possible, and especially when we won't hurt someone, if I'm divorcing and I'm, you know, my partner or my husband find a new woman and, you know, 20 years younger than me, and I'm full of resentment, I'm full of anger, I'm full of hate inside of me, and I want him to know that. And how do we do that normally? We hurt someone. We try to hurt someone to show how much we are hurting, right? So what happened probably is, like, they come to you and say, I want a house, I want a car, I want this house in New York, I want this house in New York, I want everything from him, because we want to hurt him. And sometimes we want to hurt the easy ways financially.
Absolutely. That is what they say. Exactly right.
Yeah. And is that real? Is that not real? We're coming from an emotional part of ourselves. Yes, of course we come from a part, emotional part of ourselves, because we feel hurt. Vulnerable people, when we feel vulnerable, when we feel hurt, we're exactly like animals. If we see a dog that he broke a leg in the street because he was passed over or something like that, the dog, if we try to help him, the dog will try to attack us. So when we feel very vulnerable, very fearful, the emotion take over sometimes and we attack. But actually what we want is help. Actually what we want is probably a hug and someone saying to us, everything going to be okay.
It's true. Yeah.
But we do that because we're defending ourselves. When we feel vulnerable, we try to defend ourselves the best way we can.
And you had said when we were talking about a week ago, you know, setting up for this conversation, I wrote down, you said, anger allows us to cope with emotional pain.
Yes.
If not anger, we can fall into depression. So
yes.
Anger is an outlet, but it needs to be dealt with.
It's exactly.
Could you talk about that more?
So if we imagine like a bottle of champagne, for example, you know, the cork is anger and the bubbly It's pain. It's emotional pain. So anger is very fiery. Anger is in a positive light, anger is a motivator, right? If I feel angry with something, I'm going to try to do the best I can to do what I have to do, right? Depression is completely the opposite. When we go to emotional pain, it's like water, warm water that we feel really, that we feel low. We don't have any energy. So what happens, especially in a time of crisis or in a time of trauma, anger is actually positive, because anger is kind of trying to pull us from drowning from the emotional pain. So it's quite normal. For example, people, they go through a divorce and they are very angry and they do everything. They find a new flat, they find a new school for the kids. They do everything to prepare themselves for this new change. And then after some months, everything is done and bang, they go into depression. It's quite common, because anger was there for the survival mode. And then anger kind of goes, and we go into the emotional pain. Then the body is allowing us to kind of go and grieve what happened to us.
Oh my God, Joanna. I mean, truer words. So from my own personal experience, which I share constantly on the show, I did have an amicable divorce in that there was nothing we fought about. Doesn't mean it wasn't sad. It was hugely sad, a year of sadness. And then it was over. So I thought, okay, well, I'll just bounce right back. But such an interesting visual metaphor you used, depression. It's like bathing ourselves in warm water. And yeah. I remember once it was over and I got the divorce decree, I was so surprised that every night after work, and I was in the entertainment industry, so I had to be up and emoting fun, you know, for my events and my clients. But when I didn't have that, so I would go home after work and I would put no TV on, no media. I would talk to nobody. I sat silently by myself. And it was like that. I kind of just bathed myself in silence, which was a little kind of depression. I mean, it wasn't debilitating. I went to work the next day and was productive. But then in that quiet time of the evening, until I would say about 3 months went by, all of a sudden I didn't need to do it anymore. I was done. Yeah. And I was back to my own old self, socializing, doing whatever.
But we need depressive moments. Because those moments is when we grieve, is when we allow ourselves to feel the pain. And pain is part of us. This idea that negative emotions are bad for us, it's not true. You know, we cannot be positive all the time. And the people that are positive all the time, they are kind of depressing all the rest of the emotions, because we have all the spectrum of the emotions are positive and negative. Even shame. Shame is positive and negative. They have the two different kind of poles. All of them have.
Because then, could we say this a different way? Tell me if I got it. The negative emotions really tap into our self-awareness and show us more depth about ourselves. Yes.
Definitely. You know, I normally say to my clients sometimes, I don't know so much people, they wrote a book in a happy, clappy times in their lives. Yeah. They normally, good books are written when we are in emotional pain, or we want to change something, or we want to do something with these emotions we have inside. You know, and it's exactly the opposite of depression from his expression. We have to express somehow what's going on with us in our pain levels. And going through the divorce is a lot of pain, especially when someone is fighting against another person, because they are fighting toward themselves too. They are fighting inside. They're fighting against their own negative emotions. And nowadays, we have this idea that it's not okay to feel depressed. It's not okay to feel low. We have to fake it and make it and you know, until we feel happy. And sometimes it's not reality. That is not reality.
I really appreciate that you said that. I do, because I do think there's a lot of pressure on us to always be positive.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Comes from America, this idea of the positive psychology. You know, it comes from the America. I think in the UK, we are a little bit more moderate with a positive, you know, fake it until we make it. We are a little bit less that idea.
Is that why we're called the crazy happy Americans, slap happy Americans? Because, oh God, well, we're not. We actually are not that happy. That is for sure. But of course, we want to strive for that if we can. So when the dialogue comes up, when we feel in our bodies tension, the fear percolating inside of us, let's go through maybe some physical tips we can do. I'll throw one out, see what you think. Compartmentalize it. Okay, so I'm fearful that... this is a man speaking, because this is what men go through all the time with co-parenting. I am fearful that the kids will not be with me hardly at all. I will lose my co-parenting rights. And then all of a sudden your body goes into a tense mode. You get angry. When that thought arises, what do we do?
Well, I'm an apologist to always think about, you know, what is the worst scenario? And then start from that. Well, the worst scenario is that I'm not seeing my kids probably once a month. And go through that pain and say, oh my God, and grieving from that in some ways. And then come from, okay, what about 2 weeks? What about once a week? What about the weekends, right? Because normally we fight against the idea of the worst scenario. But if we start with the worst scenario first, and slowly make peace with it. Attention, making peace with that doesn't mean that we're going to accept or we're going to like it, that I'm going to only see my kids once a month. Of course not. But emotionally, it's almost like accepting the worst scenario and coming back until the best scenario possible. But that is about an emotional level. Then what we fight for, we fight for. That is another story. That is a practical level. What is possible and what is not possible. But emotionally, I do believe sometimes, you know, it's almost like we fear the fear. We start to fear the own fears. Instead of, okay, what do I fear? This. Okay. If this happened, what I'm going to do? What should I do? You know? And find solutions, for example. Okay, I'm going to see my kids once a month. If I only see my kids once a month, I want with a lawyer. Well, I don't know how it works. In America, it's probably different. But I want to Skype them 3 times a week. Well, okay, no, the worst scenario, I find a solution. And then slowly coming until the best solution. Because normally what we do is we become stubborn. I want this. This is the only solution that I want. Every weekend, the kids are going to stay with me.
Absolutely. I will accept nothing less. This is the way it is, or we're going to go to court and I'm going to try and make sure I'll get what I want.
Yeah. And sometimes we have to find a middle ground. And I think it's not sometimes, it's probably all the time. We have to find a middle ground with a partner, right?
Divorce is an issue of compromise. It is my slogan always.
Exactly. And to compromise is like, is the opposite what people normally do. I want this. Okay, that is the best scenario. Now I'm going to go to the worst scenario and find all the possibilities until the best scenario. And then from that is making peace with every single one. I can give my own experience. I divorced. My son was 1 year old. I was quite young. I was 28. And I was living in the UK and I decided to come back to my own country in Portugal. So I had to go to court. And it was really hard because my partner was not okay. He was used to see his kid every weekend. And the only agreement that you find in the end after fighting for 3 years was that he could see his son every 3 months for 3 weeks. So, and I decided to pay the flights and everything for my son to come and see his father every 3 months for 3 weeks. It took 3 years to find a solution, right? But the idea was, you know, how can we minimize the relationship from all of us especially when you live in different countries. In your case, for example, in America, your country is so big that is, you know, the flight from UK to Lisbon, London to Lisbon, is 2 hours and a half.
Right.
So in your case, I can imagine there's loads of situations like that, that one of the parents want to move to another state.
Right.
And that is really hard. That is sometimes one of the hard situations, more than keeping the house, is the kids. And this always bad is to find the worst situation from both of us and then coming back until one option that can be okay.
All right, how's this? And I don't know if this would work for everybody, but I didn't know this was mindfulness, this what I'm going to share with you about me. Mm-hmm. But when I get anxiety ridden about whatever, I now start saying, oh, wait, okay, wait, that's just fear. Oh, yeah. Let's just not think about it. Or why don't I just wait to see if something happens?
Yeah.
Do you think that would work? I mean, I work in divorce every day, but I am asking, do you think that would be an acceptable option? Just let's not think about it. It's in the future. We haven't gotten there yet. I'm just going to dismiss this thought.
But at the same time, we have to connect the thoughts and the emotions. So the emotion for me is a lot about accepting what it is. And accepting what it is like, it's okay not to be okay. It is okay to feel fear. It is okay to feel frustration. It is okay to feel anger. What is not okay is actually behave or react in with those feelings sometimes, especially with anger. Right? Is that the reaction is what we have to delay with mindfulness. And that is the idea is like, okay, how do I feel? I feel quite pain. I feel painful now. You know, this is a lot of pain I'm going through. What's going on with my mind? My mind saying that you're not good enough. You fucked up. Sorry. You don't say that in American. Here we can say it. You know, we kind of, you know, I really did a bad job with my marriage. Probably was my fault. That is the thoughts. So it's being attentive to the thought process at the same time, being attentive to how I feel and distance ourselves enough to understand, okay, this is my thoughts. Is this real? I did the best I can because the thoughts are the ones that hurt more. The feeling, we cannot control feelings. We cannot control thoughts. So it's almost like, is the way that I see it is like we're sitting down in the middle of, you know, the park and we're seeing clouds coming and going, coming and going, coming and going. This is our thoughts. They come and they go. They come and they go. And we are attentive to what's going on in our thought process. But that is not 100% reality. This is just what we're thinking. Real, what we feel, yes. If we feel fear, it's fear that is there. If you feel anger, it's anger that is there. And it's okay what we feel. It's what we do with the feeling, right? For example, with anger, I always say with people who feel really angry, go and do some martial arts, go and run, go and do sports. Anger needs to be movement, right? Depression, when we go in a very, very low kind of, I cannot cope with that. I cannot live like this anymore. Minimum, have a shower a day, have a meal a day, even if you stay, have a walk for 10 minutes a day, even if you stay the rest of the day seeing Netflix movies, if you can, you're taking care of yourself. It's okay, but I should, don't, should is a red flag. We are taking care of ourselves now.
What is a red flag, Joanna? What is
shoots? The shoots. I should do this and I should do that. And I should feel like this and I should feel like that. Should is a red flag. No, it shouldn't anything. How do I feel? Sad. How can I feel a little bit better today? You know what? I'll be really okay to be laying down on the sofa and seeing some Netflix movies and eating some chocolate. Okay. Allow yourself to care about yourself. It's fine.
Embodied in everything that you're saying, the word trust just came up in my head. Mm-hmm. Trust that somehow relaxing in the face of anxiety is not going to be prohibitive to a good outcome.
No.
Trust that if you simply relax and say, if the worst case scenario happens, it happens. I mean, I can't control the future. I will try and make sure through practical steps that I try and get the best outcome, but I actually can't control the future and I can't control the decision making of everybody around me. So with mindfulness and with attention to healing, soothing, and expressing the emotion in a positive way, is there an element of trust that has to go on internally?
Yeah. And it's a lot, it's connected with our self-worth. It's connected that our self-worth is, it's a lot about, I will be okay. I am okay. I will be okay. Whatever happens, anything that happens, I will be, I don't know how, but I will be okay. And with mindfulness, like the smoothing, like you say, like to be more present in the moment, sometimes just, you know, like picking up a leaf from a tree and touching it and smelling it and being present with even walking. I normally say to my clients, go and walk and be attentive to the movement of walking, the feet in your floor, coming back up, the movements with your legs, just focusing how you move, one task at a time. So if I'm having a shower, I'm having a shower. How does it feel the water in my body? How does it feel the water in my skin? This is to bring us to the present moment. Because especially with divorces, what happens is that our anxiety is going to go up. Our level of trying to find solutions for the future, it's there. We are in the future already. We're not going to be in the present. So all of these exercises to bring us back to the present moment by feeling, if I'm washing the dishes, I'm washing the dishes. How does it feel the soap in my hands? How does it feel the water in my hands? How does the plate feel? It's completely being focused in the tasks that we are doing. 100%. And then if my mind is talking, the same time I'm washing the dishes, my mind is saying, you're not good enough. Look what happened to your marriage. Mind, do you have anything more to say to me? Yes, look what happened to you. You know, look terrible. You put so much weight. Thank you so much for that one. Do you have anything more to say? Because our mind, 99%, it will try to take us from the present moment. Because the mind doesn't like the way we feel.
What, tell me what you mean by that. The mind doesn't like the way we feel.
The mind, sometimes I feel that, this is kind of a new area in this moment in research. Like, it seems that the mind is kind of avoiding the feelings. So if we feel negative feelings that we feel all the time, the mind is trying to take us out of that.
Okay.
Right? So mindfulness, the people think that mindfulness is actually sometimes that to being zen, not thinking about anything. But that takes years of practice. Because more attention to give to our mind, more attention to give to our thoughts, more our mind starts to calm down. I give an example. If you have a two-year-old kid with me, this is our mind. Mommy, 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 mommy. It doesn't shut up. It's always kind of, mommy. And I say, what? Oh, I want that. Okay. Then you're going to go and come back. Our mind does the same. Talk, 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 talk. Give me attention. Give me attention. Give me attention. Give me neuron. Give me attention. Give me attention. And we try to numb it. We try to numb it with television. We're trying to numb it with sex. We're trying to numb it with drugs and alcohol and entertainment and traveling and social media, all of this idea, instead of my mind is telling me that I'm not good enough. My mind is telling me that I'm not pretty enough and I'm putting too much weight. My mind is telling me that I'm full of wrinkles in this moment. We don't like it because we believe it when our mind is telling us that. But the problem is that what our mind is saying is not truth a lot of the time.
Okay, there were so many different things I wrote down as you were talking. First of all, the fact that in order to calm the mind, we need to physically do something to counterbalance it. And so you use the example of walking. Yes. I remember, maybe it was 2006, around there, Oprah Winfrey had Eckhart Tolle on an evening seminar. Excuse me. And I had never heard of Eckhart Tolle, but I did hear of The Power of Now.
Yes.
So that's what he was talking about. And he was saying pretty much what you're saying right now. You have to live in the present moment. Excuse me again. You have to live in the present moment. And they used breathing. You used walking. Yes. They used breathing.
Well, you can use breathing too, of course. Yeah.
But it was just, that was their example of something physical. Yeah. You used examples of something physical. And Eckhart was saying, just breathe. In order to quiet the mind, just be conscious of the tension. You can truly reverse that if you're mindful of it. You can see that your shoulders are raised.
Yes.
Just relax your shoulders. Okay, that makes a huge difference. When you physically calm your body down, your mind follows suit.
Yes, definitely. And the idea with mindfulness is become a philosophy. So it becomes a way of being. So for example, even brushing our teeth in the morning, I normally close my eyes. And I'm only attentive to the brush, the sensation of the brush in my gum and in my teeth. Just to focus on that. And when I do that, all my anxiety in the morning, we have to do this, and we have to do that, and we have to do this, and we have to do that, calms down. And then when I come back again and I brush my teeth and go downstairs, my mind is more calm, and it's more clear to tell me what kind of things I have to do, and it's more easy to kind of hear my mind again. Because what happens sometimes with anxiety, the thoughts come too much together. So we have to do kind of give it space for us to understand what is there.
Understood. Did you ever, we go back to Oprah again, because she had this great author named Michael Singer on her show. She was doing these, and I forget the book that he wrote, but He was like CEO of a company, and horrible allegations were made against him, and he was asked to step down, and it was 2-3 years before everything got sorted out, and he came out fine. But he used a phrase that I would love for you to address, because it fits with mindfulness, and I think this is what he was talking about without using the word mindfulness. And he said, in order for him to deal with this enormous pressure that entered his life, he leaned into it. Instead of running away from it, he leaned into it. What does this really mean?
Well, we don't go above things, you know. When people say, I have to go above that, you know, we have to, you know, get over it. It's something that some people say. We don't go get over it. You go through things in life. We have to go through things. It's painful, yes, you know. I can imagine going through a company that is telling you, you know, that you did something wrong, or you're going to court, or, you know, you're feeling the, especially in marriages, you know, especially if you're married to a husband that is quite narcissist, that is really a hell, right? Because what happens is that our self-worth is really, really down. We don't believe in ourselves so much anymore because we have someone that is being with us for a long time telling us how bad we are. We don't have only our mind. We have someone out of us telling us how bad we are. And one of the most difficult things actually to is not to run away from what we feel, is like, is to kind of, you know, to address and say, you know what, this is quite hard. I'm going through a divorce. I don't know if I'm going to see my kids every time, but I have to wake up in the morning and somehow feel the way that I feel and being okay with that. And when I say okay with that, it's very important. When we accept our feelings, it doesn't mean that we like them. I don't like to be sad, but I am sad sometimes. And sometimes I don't even know why I'm sad. I'm just sad. And that level of acceptance, it's super important. Whatever happens to us in our life, It's accepting what it is in this moment. It's hard. Yes, it is hard. I saw a program another day that a woman lost her husband and their daughter in one go in a car crash. Well, and it was really awful, you know, and she was really interesting what she was saying, because she was saying, I wake up saying to myself, I'm sad that I cannot believe this happened to me, but it's happening. It's happening. This is happening. So she was helping herself to kind of accept what happened and accept that she was grieving something so big. And push herself to go and walk her dogs and minimizing the pain every day. But she was not running away from the pain. She was not going to the GP asking for painkillers to take the pain away. She was going through the pain. Until she said, you know, it's 11 years now. I still have the pain, but it's not the same pain that I had 11 years ago.
Wow. You know, I wondered when Kobe Bryant and his daughter died in the helicopter crash in January. I really wondered how Vanessa, his wife, was able to live.
Yeah.
And they just had like a baby. So. Yeah. You have to be attentive to that child, and I thought. Yeah,
of course. Oh, and when we go to that level of pain, when we go to this level of emotional pain, and normally I say to my clients, you know, your goal day by day is to be alive. And that is good enough, because we're going through pain. But I'm not doing anything else. No, you're doing too much. You're going through all that emotional pain. And we forget about that. We don't give attention to that. Oh, but I have to do this and I have to do this and I have to be a normal person. What is a normal person? When someone goes through so much emotional pain, people don't have an idea how hard it is, how draining it is, how tiring it is to go through it. Not above it, not running away from it, like with alcohol, drugs and all of that, but through that. It's enough. So to keep someone alive day by day, to keep themselves alive, that is the goal of the day. Everything that comes on the top of that, good news.
So you're in the middle of a divorce. You have children. Mm-hmm. And you're married to a narcissist. I know more, it seems like more men are narcissists, but women are too. I mean,
yeah. Some. Yeah.
Yeah, so it can happen on either side. And unfortunately, it's contentious enough that both sides, both parties have to have attorneys.
Yes.
Okay. So the fear and what I hear being expressed by the other spouse who's not the narcissist will be I'm sorry, guys, just to use the he example, but... He's going to charm the judge. The judge is really going to, like everybody, think he is the greatest guy in the world, and somehow I'm going to be the bad person, and I'm not going to see my kids enough. What do you do when you're that wife that is living in that fear? Mm-hmm. How do you counteract this?
Mm-hmm. The most important,
even.
Yeah. The most important thing is that the narcissist is going to try to do anything for the wife, in this case, to react. And react in a bad way. To show the jury, to show the lawyers that actually she's not okay in a mental health level. Because normally they play with that card. So the woman in this case, you know, I advise especially with some kind of emotional help in a therapy level, because she needs to have empower herself again. And one of the things that happen a lot with women, with men too, but in this case, we give an example of women. Women, they come from a divorce from a narcissist. The self-worth is really low. They don't believe in themselves anymore. They don't believe they're intelligent. They don't believe they are pretty. They don't believe they are capable. They don't believe even in a mental health sometimes, because the narcissist had been manipulated so much for so many years sometimes that the person is there has lost all the power. So what happened is they're quite angry. So, and the narcissist knows that. So that is an easy way of taking it a person apart in front of the jury, in front of the lawyers. See, she's not okay. She's angry. Or she, and they will play, for example, with drugs or alcohol, anything that is there to show that a person is not 100% in a mental health level. They are very, it's very common that to happen. I have a case, actually, someone that is my friend, not a client, someone that is my friend, that in the end, the husband put her in a psychiatric unit and told the lawyers that she was so bad she cannot have the kids. And somehow that played really, really well for him, because she only sees their kids every 3 months or something like that. And it took a long time. It took about 3 or 4 years in a court for the jury to decide that actually she had been manipulated. She had been played out by the husband, right? Because it's a very common card that the husband will put is about mental health. And so I will advise the woman in that case to go and ask for a psychologist or even a therapist, a counselor, that can help even with the court.
I'm in shock that he was able to do that. How does one do that? How does one get another adult institutionalized?
Yes, it's kind of, in our days, it's still possible. It's crazy, because this is the stories that you hear from 50 years ago. You know, I see the stories in my country. My country, I'm Portuguese, by the way, and my country is quite Christian. So, many years ago, or 50 years ago, was quite common if the husband didn't want that wife anymore, put him in a psychiatric hospital, and then, you know, she is not there anymore, and then he can marry it again. Oh, and it was quite common, a lot of women being in psychiatric hospitals in that way. It was horrible.
Oh.
To be honest, it still happened in some countries.
This sounds unbelievably horrible. Yes. I don't think it's that easy at all to do it in the United States, thank God.
I hope not. Give me that chance. It's quite difficult in the UK, but in Europe, in some places, I know some cases are being quite complicated because of that. So it's about mental health, and it's about to show to the juries that the woman is not capable of.
Okay.
Right?
Well, let me try something out on you for size, because I really love playing with communication, because this is what I say all the time. Communication is where it's at. The words we speak with the sound of our voice, our attitude means everything when we're negotiating. Mm-hmm. So using this very typical example of one spouse is narcissistic, the other feels victimized by it, and now you have children, you have a court case, you have assets to deal with. How about this? Do you think this is at all possible, Joanna? Mm-hmm. For the non-narcissistic parent to say, when they're being threatened, you know, text messages, you know, those emails, those phone calls, outside of the lawyer's offices, one spouse to the other, would it be appropriate to say, I understand this is how you feel, we can work it out. And just with your conversation, neutralize it and not try and fight against it. Just be accepting, like your example, living in the present moment. Okay, I understand this is how you feel. Okay, we'll sort it out. Thank you for sharing with me.
Yes.
How would that work with a narcissist?
That is perfect, because it's exactly what they don't want. They don't want the person that is victimized. They don't want the person to feel like, you know, that everything is okay. They want to show the worst of the person in front of people, that's, you know, the lawyers in this case, or even a jury, you know, that the person is not okay. So they will try, even with lies sometimes, they will try to break the person in front of other people.
Okay.
So that woman in that case needs to be very attentive to that, and needs to be trained to not react to the emotional content that the narcissist is trying to manipulate, because that will happen.
So that, I think, is the biggest challenge of anybody on the other side of narcissism, But if you can perfect that, and if you're going to do anything, practice that. Practice neutralizing communication.
Yes.
Acceptance of the other person's position, like verbal acceptance, not internal acceptance, of course. Verbal acceptance. Okay, I understand how you feel. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah. Yeah. Things can happen, for example, you know, I give us this example, you know, like in between lawyers and the man said, but you never work in your life. And the woman had been working. Right? And that is something that just to kind of trigger her. And she will say, oh, I'm so, you know, it's quite hard because someone said, what are you talking about? I never work in my life.
Of course. And that's the defense. Yes.
Yes. And that she's starting to defend herself. Right. But you will put more fire. You will put more fire to kind of to have an argument in front of everyone. And normally she will lose because they are really good in arguments.
Right.
They are really, really good in arguments. So in this case, it's exactly what you're saying. Oh, okay. You do feel that I didn't work so much in my life. Okay. I understand that. I understand that you feel like that. I do feel in a different way. Bang. And it's not more conversation in there. Even if she kind of expressed herself that I'm sorry that you feel like that. I feel that actually I have been working some years. And it's done. Because after, it doesn't have so much more to say.
That's right. This has been so exciting. So we're coming into the closing of our hour, Joanna. And I mean, I have so many notes we didn't even get to, but everything we said, I think is so beneficial to people. Is there something you would like to say to the listeners before we close and end our time? Just so they can start the practice of mindfulness.
Yes. Well, for me, the most important beginning of any mindfulness is, I normally say, take about 5 minutes a day and write down what your mind is saying to you. Especially the negative thoughts. What's going on in there? What's going on with those negative thoughts? You know, the kind of, I'm not pretty enough. I'm not feeling good. I feel that I'm a failure all the time. Because that is the first layer to understand the patterns that our minds is saying to us. And we, for so long, are so used to them that we believe in them. And by writing them down and reading, we are kind of beginning. It's just the beginning of starting to distance ourselves from what our mind is saying to us and what is reality. Because, you know, it's completely different if we say something in a paper saying, I'm not pretty enough, than coming from here.
Or I'm afraid I'm going to lose everything in this divorce.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, anything that comes from the mind and put it out. And that is the first level of understanding a mind, how the mind works. And I could give another one is to start, you know, it's very simple. Like you see on the internet, there's loads of different ideas with mindfulness, like the idea of brushing our teeth in the morning and just being very attentive to the brush in our teeth and how does it feel, and close our eyes and just being with the sensations of it. So that is another way of, in the morning especially, to calm down our minds and wake up again and come back to the present moment. And each time we feel that coming out of the present moment is bringing back, is sometimes just look to something in our living room and look at something like a lamp, for example, and really looking at it, the details of it, or touching on something, pick up some kind of anything that you have, you know, have a material or a piece of fruit and touch it and feel it and just focus on that. So what we're doing is bringing us to the present moment over and over again. When our mind is going in a spiral to thinking about the future, thinking about what's going to go wrong, to think about, you know, how bad you're feeling, all of that is taking, you know, we're not taking the mind from it. We're just becoming more attentive to what is there. But not going in a spiral of, oh my God, something, you know.
I want to address everybody going through divorce that nobody gets everything. That's a fantasy. That's in the movies. That your greatest fear, and regardless of what your spouse says, I'm going to take everything from you. I'm going to take the kids away. does not typically happen. Do not need to fight about it. Do not need to stress over it. It is an issue of working things out. I mean, that's kind of what I wanted to say to divorcing people. Here are my three takeaways from our hour together. My three takeaways are, don't run from the emotion. Mm-hmm. Accept that you have emotion, but move it aside. Focus on present time. That's number two. And then balance, number three, balance emotion with physical activity. Those are my takeaways.
Yeah, you can be. Takeaways. Not putting the emotion away. I will say that being aware of the emotion is there. We're going through emotions. We cannot put them away or control them, but we go through emotions. So they will come and they will go. Sometimes they sit with us for a week. Sometimes they sit down for a month. Sometimes for an hour. But they come and go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Will the difference then be, you know it's there. Okay, fine. Sit there if you want. I know you're there. I'm just going to go ahead and do this now.
Yes, yes. We leave with it.
Okay, that's excellent.
Yep.
So you've been fabulous. I have really appreciated the time and the information that you've shared with me and the listeners. Joanna, if people would like to get in touch with you, regardless of where they live in the world, how can they do that?
Well, you can go through my webpage. I'm Joanna Pancada. I have Instagram, and I have my webpage is www.joannapancada.com. It's quite easy to find
me. Joanna is J-O-A-N-A.
Yes.
Pancada, P as in Paul, A-C-A, D as in dog, A. Joanna Pancada.
Pancada, yeah.
Okay.
.com. And I will, in this moment, I work a lot with mindfulness because I work with dialectical behavior therapy. So it's skills about how to regulate our emotions, how to live with our emotions. So basically, this is the work that I have been doing for at least 14 years now.
Okay, I like that, how to live with our emotions. And I will do that when we get off of this interview. I'll start living with some of my emotions that I put aside so we could do this interview. Joanna, thank you again very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All of the listeners, you have been part of Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. Please tell your friends, share this with everybody. We have a range of topics that I know will work for giving you the most amicable divorce experience possible. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll be back with you next week.